myself, Tara Laufey, the three of us back in the house. Chris is producing. Hit that thumbs up button, please, if you haven't already. We'll tell you about all these great things available to you, courtesy of Yahoo, coming up in a minute. And you want to make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss anything going on, from live shows to video on demand. All right, Tara Laufey, back in the house, the three of us. Season starting to wind down across the board. And hopefully both of you had a great weekend. My weekend wasn't ruined because, thankfully, Awesomeo, Odd Shopper, all of our DFS projections allowed me to hit a couple of bets following. But I have to say, as happy as Laufey was, right, Tara, we were going back and forth on this Lions game because we were on opposite sides of it. So you
told
can
you they
imagine.
Were winning that.
Yeah, right. Negadelphia, Dave Lockerin was coming out in full effect right there.
Tuesday on our DFS show, I said the Lions outright. The Lions win this game. I'm telling you, man, I was all over that one. And it nice. Shouldn't have come down to the final play either. Dan Campbell tried to lose that game for them. He was actively trying to lose that game. Not only did he go for it on fourth and one at his own 30 while with the lead, but he decided to run a passing play and have Jared Goff drop back. So that should have been a smoother victory than that, but we'll take it.
Yeah, right.
What do you
Tara,
mean?
Don't let him fool you. Before that final drive, Laufey had one of the most defeatist back and forths I've seen you have. And we've lost some pretty bad bets together.
I said that's how the season has gone. Oftentimes, that's how it's gone, and it almost went the same way. But look, when you're betting a 7-point dog, I forget what the exact money line number was, but when it's not going to be easy, you know, and it wasn't, but we'll take it. And George Kittle, man, welcome back, big fella. Gotta love to see this. We talked about it. Hold on to this guy. Trade for him. We talked about it a few weeks ago. I know Debo's out, but he's probably out another week too. And George Kittle looks outstanding. This dude is an absolute. Tara, did you see that catch and run down the sideline, staying in bounds as a tight end?
I did. I mean, it's crazy. He is so insanely athletic. To this literal day, I have a league where the trade deadline is right now, and someone's still trying to get me to buy him. And I'm on the fence, but I'm just kind of like, I don't know, because I've got Waller. It's crazy, but yeah, he's just an insane athlete.
What a weekend, really, it was. And you're right, with Debo out now moving forward, just hopefully we'll get some sort of clarity with San Francisco and that offense. You know, it's the revolving door of what the hell to make of the Philadelphia Eagles backfield, so that's not going anywhere today, by all means. But as we look back at week 13 here, we still have one game to go tonight, and it's going to be interesting how we kind of factor in who's on both sides here for Monday Night Football. Let's look at who stood out for the right and really the wrong reasons. We have our MVP, our most frustrating player here as well. And it's going to factor into how we've recapped it as well. So, all right, so Tara, why don't you start the most valuable player for you across the board this weekend?
You know, for me, we were talking about that Detroit game. I got to give it up for Amon-Ra St. Brown. What a way to have your best game. I mean, first of all, by far his best game of his rookie season. Second of all, first touchdown of the year, game winner for the Lions in their first win of the year. So, I mean, that's kind of crazy. It was like, I can't imagine the emotion there. 10 receptions, 12 targets, 86 yards with that touchdown. I mean, it's really been an up and down season for him as a rookie. But, you know, if you look at him overall and what he's showcased well, he's actually been pretty reliable, even if, you know, those targets are kind of minimized. He's got a 76% catch rate. And so, I mean, this 10 for 12 just kind of epitomized in the game-winning clutchness. I mean, you know, it kind of showcased that maybe there's some promise there for the future. So, yeah, I got to give it up. MVP of the week for his incredible clutch play for the Lions.
I love it. I watched all the videos on the Detroit Lions Twitter yesterday because I'm a sucker for bad teams getting those wins. I'm a sucker for the locker room celebrations and the game ball stuff. I just am. I thoroughly enjoy watching that stuff. I rewatched the replay of Amon-Ra St. Brown catching that ball multiple times. I don't know what Zimmer was doing calling that defense either, though. Like, brought no pressure whatsoever. They just sat back in the end zone and gave St. Brown that big pocket to just curl in and make the grab. So it was awesome. He played well. Just happy for that team. I mean, they're bad, and that was their Super Bowl. So congratulations to the Detroit Lions, but
I didn't even need them to cover the Vikings. I had them in game minus one. I had a teaser that brought them to a half point. I got them in game when they were down plus money. All I needed was the Vikings just to win, not even a cover. And I got, but
shouldn't doubt the Lions, man.
Yeah. I didn't even go to, I knew, but see, that's the thing to both of you. I knew not to take the Vikings with the full line because the Lions will cover. I thought I could get not even greedy. Chris is laughing because he got burned by that here as well. So it's 2-2. All right. We're on split sides here. And Tara has to open up the wound right away with her MVP.
Got to kick it off right.
Who are you going to, Lofty, who are you going? Jared Goff?
They've no. I would never. They've covered four straight and five of six.
Yes. I mean,
the truth is they haven't been playing that bad of football, and their defense hasn't looked awful either. You know, they've allowed 27, 16, 13, and 16 points over their last four. They haven't been that bad. It's an interesting team to say the least. And the Vikings just aren't good, man. Like, they awful play calling. They lost Adam Thielen, which definitely hurts. I'm not acting like the Lions should have smoked them here, but the Vikings are just one of those teams that will always make it a game. And I think minus one is fine too, Eitan. Like, if you're going to do it, I think that's fine. You're not betting on the cover. You're just betting on the win. You know, it makes sense. But my God, they're not a very good football team. I don't know how much longer Zimmer is going to be around, but no, Jared Goff, that is not my MVP. My MVP has to go to an Eagle this week because Dallas Goedert balled out, man.
Yes.
6 for 105 and two touchdowns with Gardner Minshew at the helm. 6 for 105 on six targets to boot. So it was a phenomenal game. After the catch, Dallas Goedert looked outstanding. This is the type of performance you were looking for from this guy. Really, after Zach Ertz left. And I think from a dynasty standpoint, you should feel good about Goddard going into next season. They already have a pretty condensed target share. And I think you're just going to see him get better and better. There's going to be some down weeks that they continue to run the ball heavily, but Dallas Goedert is that guy on this team. It's him and I don't know where Devonta Smith went recently, but crazy. Dallas Goedert though, great performance, two scores, seventh best fantasy producer on the entire week, not at his position, but on the entire week. I think he deserves a mention for sure here. Finally having that breakout game that we were all waiting for.
You know, here's what I would add to that is, and it's frustrating from anybody who's rostering Devonta. It's frustrating for anybody who's rooting for that team or him individually, but Dallas Goedert should always be present. And there really isn't anybody else but Smith and maybe Watkins to a lesser extent that may even be on that team next year. When you talk about, you know, we all want to get rid of Jalen Reagor. Maybe the team does that.
He stinks.
Right. And to your point, the team is, they may bring in another tight end next year, but nobody is actively searching on the Eagles to bring in a dynamic player at that position to take targets away from that. So you have a weakened wide receiver core, at least heading into next year, and you don't have anybody below him on the depth chart. So I think that point is compounded, Lofty, when you look at Dallas Goedert moving into next year.
Yeah, there's nobody else. Unless you're looking at like Tyree Jackson, who is a converted wide receiver or quarterback,
right?
Or shortstop, who knows? But you're right. There's nobody behind them. And let me say, Tara, finally, Eitan, finally, Miles Sanders, 20 plus carries. I mean, come on, it's happening. And then
he's hurt.
It is. Right. Yeah. It was funny how it ended up. We talked about this on the Friday show, I think, about how it literally went back to what it was supposed to be at the very beginning of the season, where it's Miles Sanders and Kenneth Gainwell catching some passes. So we got what we thought finally. So that was really, really interesting to see. Hopefully we can see more of that moving forward.
That was my 30-point guy. Yes, bye week now, so maybe he's rested up. But that was my 30-plus guy on Friday's show. He was Miles Sanders because of the scenario. Close.
I mean, what do you have, 17?
I needed a touchdown or two, yes.
Yeah, Gainwell sniped him.
I know, vulture out there. We'll get back to Gainwell. I have a feeling he's going to make an appearance here. Let me round out the final one, and this is an easy one, but it comes with a nice little asterisk because as somebody who was watching that first quarter and constantly questioning and asking the people around me, are you sure he's not hurt? Are you sure Cooper Kupp didn't leave the game at some point in the first quarter? For him to come back, and I don't care if it's against the Jacksonville Jaguars or the Detroit Lions or anybody like that, the guy was absent and probably gave a lot of people, like myself included, unnecessary agita, just trying to think, is this going to be the game where he turns into Mike Williams? And Kupp came back. He dominated, 8 grabs, 129, 1 score. He was my MVP, and it helped me beat into the ground our pal Nick Lepre in the Awesome OC League.
Agita. I love it. The only place I ever heard people say it was like the old Howard Stern show. Yeah. He was good.
It's the same thing happened last week. Police dramas. Yeah.
Cooper Kupp did nothing last week, and then he finished with 10 targets. So, yeah, got involved. Yeah. Did it. It was Sonny Michel early on. They ran the ball a decent amount, and Cooper Kupp's always going to get his. How many targets did he end up having?
10. 10. It was again,
10.
Very interesting.
Or what?
Yeah.
10 and 8 grabs on those 10 targets.
His targets this season are 10, 10, 13, 13, 9, 13, 12, 10, 13, 12, 11, 10.
Yeah. Very, very reliable. And it's fun, kind of interesting how it's panning out that he's still able to get that level of production. And we're also seeing the creep in of Van Jefferson having multiple productive weeks in a row. Odell, smaller target share this week, but again, got the touchdown. So we're seeing where we're already getting, you know, these second and third receivers that are so incredibly productive behind him. You know, maybe this offense can get clicking moving into the postseason, and it's interesting to see how Daryl Henderson will work back into it as well, since Sonny Michel did look pretty good.
Real quick, before we get into the most frustrating players across the board here, and I love, Lofty, where you're going again, because there's a narrative that I think that needs to be destroyed. I'm just curious, for both of you, where is Cooper Kupp drafted next year?
Sure.
Like, how high do you think? First round, right?
All right, this is a fun exercise. So if we're PPR, right?
Yes, full PPR.
Jonathan Taylor's, I got to go Taylor, because wide receiver is generally a deeper position.
Sure, but, absolutely.
But also, so many running backs have been hurt this year that I wonder if that's going to affect the sentiment coming into next season. But guys like Jonathan Taylor, who are we taking in the first round in no specific order?
Or you can just go through, like, if you wanted to build 12 guys.
All right.
And go in that order, right?
Well, but I can't give you the order. And Tara, throw some, you got, you both, throw some. So Jonathan Taylor.
Taylor.
For sure.
Kamara,
Derrick,
right?
Henry.
Derrick Henry.
Yeah, I would say Derrick Henry first, since we don't know the quarterback situation heading into next year for Kamara.
Right. But I'm just saying first round. Like, we're definitely taking Derrick Henry early in the first. Where's Dalvin?
Okay, so we've got Henry, Taylor, Kamara, Dalvin Cook, as you mentioned, absolutely. Nick Chubb?
You got to doom.
No.
Okay, so Chubb's not a first rounder.
Are we putting Joe Mixon in there now? Is he a solidified first rounder?
For me, yes. Yeah. Definitely.
Eckler?
For me, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Would you?
I think you can make it.
I would do it. I would. In that offense, I trust it. Yeah.
Okay.
Eckler,
so we're at Henry, definitely. Taylor, Kamara, Mixon, Eckler. That's 5 guys. Travis
Zeke's
Kelce
out of the first.
Yep. Yeah. Saquon Barkley's out of the first.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Travis Kelce.
But if Barkley drops far next year, that's when you grab Saquon Barkley. You know, you get that, like, Todd Gurley coming off injury season. Who?
So I could see a scenario where, let's say you're in a 12-person league and you're at the bottom of that snake and you have 12 and then 1, where you would get somebody at 12 and then maybe Barkley at 1 if he slipped, something like that.
No, I'm taking him after that. I'm thinking late second.
So I added Travis Kelce.
Like, you're taking DeAndre Swift over Barkley at this point, you know?
You have to.
I'm not taking either in the first round, but yes.
No, okay. But Swift's an early second rounder.
Okay, so we've got Henry, Taylor, Kamara, Mixon, Eckler. I've added Travis
Kelce.
I'm
taking Kupp probably 5th. And I think I probably take him over Alvin Kamara at this point.
Yeah.
Wow.
I would agree with that. Because when you think about it, if you look at the other wide receivers as well, we don't know where Devontae will be next year.
Right.
Again, we've got Tyreek, who's been, you know, that Kansas City offense a little inconsistent. So I would definitely be taking Kupp over Tyreek. I mean, who else really is there at that point for an right. argument?
Hopkins is no longer
Hopkins is out. Yeah.
A top factor.
Yeah.
Like Jamar Chase,
Adams.
Jamar, she mentioned Tara mentioned Adams. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
And Adams is up there for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot like Jamar Chase. Jamar Chase is a great player. I'm not sure I put him. Like, you're not putting him before Kopp. There's no way about it. Chris said Debo's a good one. Definitely not before Kopp, but Debo is probably top five right now.
So the only real, like, in 12-team leagues, on just looking at ADP here, it's really Devontae Adams. And then you get into Tyreek Hill kind of there at the bottom end. But I'm with you there, the point you made, Tara, about Hill dropping. So Cooper Kupp and Debo Samuel would really be the only two guys who are not ADP from 12 to really 14 that you could make an argument. Like Najee Harris is, you know, ADP at 14 this year. Do you think that significantly improves next year? Probably not, right?
He's a first.
Yeah, but we know who he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's on a team that okay, this is
they're
going to
have a new
thing.
Quarterback.
I don't care as much about the quarterback as I do about their offensive line.
Yeah.
Got it.
If you can improve that offensive line and the running back isn't any, they're nothing without a good line. It's just the way it is. You know, look at so many of these guys that run behind good. The example I always use is, do you guys remember in 2000? And by the way, someone said, what about, where's CMC? I'm still drafting McCaffrey top like 3 or 4. He's just too good. I'll take my chances. But do you guys remember 2018, was it? The Rams Super Bowl season where Todd Gurley had that amazing year and then got hurt in week 15. And CJ Anderson came in, ran behind the best blocking line in the league and had two monster games. And I think he even had started a playoff game where he had another 100 yards. He wasn't good. He got cut by the Panthers as a backup to CJ McCaffrey or Christian McCaffrey. And he came in and crushed. And I think we could name 1,000 examples of guys that have produced. Jordan Howard behind the Eagles line. You know, just look at the examples. They're endless.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so that settles it. I just was curious. I love the long answers here because, you know, it's interesting to see as the regular season winds down for us here on season long, how much guys have impacted where they're going to be drafted next year. And that's both positive and negative.
It's a fun conversation, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think so. All right, let's hit frustration. We have to get our frustrations out. We'll talk about some big injuries and then get into some stocks that are both rising and falling. Sarah, why don't you start? I'll slide in here. And I love Lofty, so he could take some time and end with his frustration.
Yeah, I don't think mine will be very, very long because I think everyone understands this frustration. It's Terry McLaurin, unfortunately. Mm. I love him. I love the talent. I do not love the level of inconsistency. So this week against Vegas and what should have been a good potential matchup for him, we've got a 3 receptions on 5 targets, 22 yards. I mean, with him, it seems like there is no in between. He's getting you less than double digit points or he's going above 20. It's a big jump in between and it's kind of a little bit hard to predict as well. So very frustrating when you've got this player, you've got this talent, you've got somebody who is in fact a wide receiver too, statistically, and you have to roll him out there, but you don't exactly know what you're getting on a week to week basis. So my most frustrating player, unfortunately.
I'm with you. And it's a shame too. It's a shame because he's good. He's really good. I mean, we've already seen, I think 3 or 4 games with 30 plus fantasy points this year. You get big production from him, but ultimately you need Terry McLaurin to be more consistent. And you know, I'm sure we'll do a show soon where we start talking about like, where will these guys get drafted next year?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's the quarterback situation in Washington is also probably going to be in flux. And it's not like there's a great class of quarterbacks coming up. So yeah, that's definitely a concern. I love Terry McLaurin, but big disappointment. And he's risky at this point. There's a lot of receivers you're probably drafting ahead of him right now. But in best ball, you have to love him because he's going to have some of those huge weeks to put you over the top. For me, it's the Chiefs offense again. And you can blame it on the drops if you'd like. I see a lot of people doing that, showing film of Patrick Mahomes throwing balls to Tyreek Hill, blaming it on Hill. And then I see the exact same clip of people showing that and saying it was Patrick Mahomes' fault because the balls were couple, you know, the one that was tipped by Hill on that crossing route was a little high, and he just threw it. I mean, that was a fastball coming at him. Should Hill have had it? Probably, but it's hard to really say Tyreek Hill just needs to catch that every time. Again, kind of a polarizing subject, but they scored 22 points. However, one of them was an interception for a pick six in the fourth quarter. And then what did they have? A touchdown and three field goals aside from that?
Yeah,
they had one offensive touchdown, right? That was it. So ugly, really ugly stuff. I'm fortunate enough to be in a position where I actually don't have a ton of exposure to those guys this year. Even in Dynasty, I'm not really overweight on guys like Kelce and Hill and Mahomes. But there are so many people out there. I get people DMing me and texting me every day like, dude, they ruined it. I'm out of the playoffs now. Because they have stacks. They have a Mahomes Hill stack or a Mahomes Kelce stack that just came up completely flat. Javonte Williams had as many points almost as every single pass catcher did in the receiving game yesterday from Kansas City. It was a really, really brutal game from them. And they keep winning, but they're not helping us for fantasy outside of a couple games over the last 1.5 months. It's tough.
Yeah, this was a really weird one for me because Teddy Bridgewater was someone who I got a lot of, you know, do I stream this guy over such and such? And I went with Teddy, and then I kind of felt bad about it, and I was like, oh man, I can't believe I did that. And I go back and I look at the stats, and I'm like, he did better than Patrick Mahomes. I mean,
by a lot.
Yeah.
Very weird situation that it ended up, it was such an ugly game, but he was actually the one that was more productive. So yeah, you're right. They're getting these wins, but it's not amounting for much from a fantasy perspective for us.
No, the defense is playing better than their offense recently, which is crazy. The team is back as a whole. Like Kansas City is back, but their offense is not back. And that's going to be their undoing when they go up against somebody better than Denver.
Well, it's
in the
just
playoffs, at least.
The drops and miscues, it's really hard to figure out what the hell is going on with this team. But I can tell you that if you go back to week 7, you know, you're talking about a guy in Mahomes that you're drafting early. If you go back to week 7, Patrick Mahomes is the QB. What do you think he is, if you had to guess, since week 7?
So you're specifically using a number that's not like from the start of the season.
Well, this
so
is my, because that's when the decline
things
started
picked up
for them. Yeah. What?
Oh, it started weeks is what you're saying, week 7.
Yes, they were still scoring points, even when they were 1-3 earlier in the year, they were still putting up points. They just weren't winning.
Yeah.
I'll say 16. Tara? Maybe
I'll say
12. Even worse.
I'll say 12.
All right. You got it. QB 16.
Wow.
The QB 16. Amazingly, he's the QB 5 on the season. But when you need him over this stretch, Patrick Mahomes hasn't showed up. So, yeah, just really bad performance. Stick with him. You got to keep playing him. There are no alternatives right now. If you're asking me, should I play Garner Minshew if he starts in week 15 over Patrick Mahomes? No, just keep playing him. You have to.
Jalen Hurts over Patrick Mahomes in week 15 would be a more interesting start.
Against Washington, I'd still play Mahomes. I'm still playing Mahomes.
Okay. Yeah, me too.
No argument there. All right. I will say this on the way out. I'm not going to get into it by any means, but I feel somewhat validated because I put Mike Williams as my most frustrating player because I imagine that alongside me, everybody else who has him on the team benched him for fill in the blank. It didn't bite me specifically because I'm wide receiver heavy, but I see our buddy Clintwood83 on the chat. My most frustrating player equals Mike Williams. You want a big dad of him? Just tell me to put him on my bench. And I guarantee you that way more people than not who have Mike Williams on their team sat him and didn't get even those, 13 plus points that he put up, it's probably at the expense, 16, pardon me, that he put up was still probably at the expense of like somebody else's 8 or 7 or something along those lines. So just the fact that other people were feeling that frustration as well makes me feel a little bit better. All right, let's hit tonight. And I think we can kind of blow through this game specifically and maybe just build a little bit of a game flow, how you both see it. And how that's going to impact people out there. And I'll just start, Lofty, if you want to do a good job of painting this picture here for myself and Tara to fill in. But mainly, I think the biggest variable that we're dealing with tonight across the board is the wind. is the wind and how much wind is expected at Orchard Park and how that's going to impact these two teams, specifically the skill set players and maybe to a lesser extent, the quarterbacks.
Yeah, so the interesting thing about this game is, as you pointed out, the wind, but also the fact that, you know, if you're looking at kickers, you don't have any alternative. But yeah, guys like Tyler Bass is seventh in fantasy points this year. You want to know where Nick Folk is? Nick Folk is first in fantasy points. This is probably the first time I've ever talked about kickers on this show. I only mention that, though, because there's probably a lot of people with these guys still in their starting lineups for tonight thinking, you know, all right, well, not knowing about the weather. I think the biggest issue here and a concern of mine is that what's going to happen is you might have Belichick, if it's a 48-yard field goal, you know, or a 45, 50-yard field goal that you'd normally kick on 4th-and-3, you might be just going for it at this point. And you see that often in games like this. But if I had to break down this game, the way I see it is you've got a team in New England that wants to run the football. Ramondre Stevenson and Harris are essentially splitting workloads right now. If that's the case, I expect them to try and control time of possession and run it down Buffalo's throat, because that's what Indy did, and they gutted them. And other teams have been able to run the football easily against they beat Tennessee, beat them with that exact same recipe. Buffalo's going to need to start running the football, be it Singletary or Breida. Zach Moss was a DNPCD, coach's decision, inactive last week. I don't know if he plays, but both of these teams have very good defenses. The total has since dropped from 48 to 41. So if I can get away from this game, and you really can't at this point, then I would have. But the one guy I think could stand out here is Cole Beasley. If the wind is going to affect them, I think Cole Beasley benefits significantly. And I don't know who it's going to be on the ground, but I might same game parlay, put a little sprinkle on Harris and Stevenson both to score in this game. I could see that being the case.
I like that. I do. I agree. You know, heavy on the ground game. I mean, both of them seem like both sides seem like they could both be a pretty even split. And from my perspective, what I'm kind of looking at this game is I want to see how this Buffalo defense holds up without Tre'Davious White. So we've got on the opposite side with New England, someone who I've been, you know, a proponent of for a little while now is Kendrick Bourne. And I'm interested to see, because a lot of people were a little bit scared. It's Buffalo's defense. Are we really pivoting to him? Are we able to use him? And I can understand why you wouldn't, but it's going to be really interesting to see what this secondary looks like, because there's a significant drop off from going from Tre'Davious White down to the next man up. So it'll be interesting to see if, you know, Bill Belichick and Mac Jones find a way to try and attack this offense where they're vulnerable. And it'll be interesting for us because they turn around in 2 weeks and they play Buffalo again. So I think we'll know a lot and we'll be able to see this and see if some of these pieces, any of these pieces are going to be usable in what I think might be either the final week of the playoffs or championship week for us. So it'll be very interesting to see.
You know, what's interesting is, you know, going through it, I just come off the betting show with Ben on the Odds channel, and he brought up the same point that Laffey brought up about not going for as many field goals and that possibly extending drives to where you would settle for three normally, but extend it and even get a touchdown here to increase some scoring. And then I start looking at Odds Shopper, where it's like the one-stop shop for everything from a betting standpoint. We have a lot of overs in receiving yards. And that's factored in with the win. And Alex and Osimo are factoring in everything for projections. And it's not just Cole Beasley. It's everybody, not every single player, but I see a lot of – and I just wonder if – like Nelson Agholor, granted, the books have adjusted. He's at 20.5, but we have him projected for 36 yards. And I wonder if, based off our own projections, I wonder if when you start to look at numbers and factor in the weather, it's not going to be as big of a deal – as the average person who looks at 20 miles per hour wind and says, oh, that's it. Everybody's just going to run until the day's over. I wonder if we're going to see a little more contrary to that. I see a Luffy. I see the wheels working.
Yeah, no, I think you'd be mistaken to just assume. The way I look at it is generally speaking, if you worry about weather, it usually bites you. Like if you fade guys based on weather, it usually bites you in the ass, especially with good quarterbacks like Josh Allen. The difference is, like, for me at least, the betting market's so much different than fantasy football, because while we have the overs here, look what we're projecting them at, like 45 yards, 36 yards. You know what I mean? So for me, Mac Jones, we have him projected over passing yards, but we have him at like 213 on a 201 prop, right? I think ultimately the Patriots want to run the football. Mac Jones is averaging less than 27 attempts per game on this 4 or 5 game win streak. I forget the exact number. You have to play Stephon Diggs. Like, you just have to play Diggs. You have to play Josh Allen. You have to play anyone. It's the last game of the week. But I think Beasley could benefit here if the weather does have an impact. Otherwise, the guys you were already playing, you're already playing, and you don't really have a choice.
You know, Tara, you've been on Knox a couple of times on our shows. I would think outside of Cole Beasley, he's the guy that would benefit exponentially if the wind is a factor.
Yeah, you know, they seem to want to get the ball to him in any way that they can, whether it's a touchdown, whether it's him not getting a touchdown, and they're peppering him with additional targets. I think it makes sense, especially when, you know, I say we don't factor in the weather aggressively, but, you know, when you look at that type of weather game, it does seem like it might tilt more towards a tight end. So I do think that that makes a lot of sense, especially when you look at the way that they've been utilizing him lately.
Oh, man, this is it. This is the Laufey plus Knox anytime TD parlay. Harris, Stevenson, Dawson, Knox gets you plus 2,800. I'm in.
Okay.
I'm in.
I like it.
I mean, it's tough to get running back touchdowns from both guys on the same team.
You said that. That's the one you gave out.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying, I want everyone to know that this is a massive long shot. That's what I'm saying. And then if you're adding another touchdown, it's a lot, but
there's the greed. All right, let's look at some injuries here. We have some stock up, stock downs we're going to get to here as well. Just a reminder, if you're hanging with us, please hit that thumbs up button. Make sure you're subscribed to the Fantasy Football channel, as we have a lot of great content, both live and on demand for you, really to help you out from everything, in-season, draft, dynasty. We have you covered. So click those links below. And this is the beauty of it. If you've been playing on Yahoo, that's fine. Click that first link. You're going to get $10 free to play with. And if you're brand new to Yahoo, well, click the link below and you're going to get 1 free month of Awesomo Plus Platinum. It's all over the city where we are, Tara. You cannot escape the quarterback controversy conversation. Minshew mania has infected Philadelphia. You can see Lofty's head shaking. He represents the rational group in our fan base, but everybody outside of Philadelphia will question whether or not that exists. And I understand the stereotype that exists of us. But look, I just don't know how anybody can confidently say that Jalen Hurts isn't the starter moving forward. It's just about how healthy he is, right?
Yeah. You know,
Gardner Minshew is. Yeah.
You know, I mean, you have to love Gardner Minshew. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw the video of him hugging his dad, just hyped up. I mean, just the energy. I mean, he's great just video. That kind of guy that you just want to root for. I don't think that he should be starting over Jalen Hurts, but I do find it interesting that, you know, it's weird that he ended up in theory as the third option there before Joe Flacco was shipped off to New York. Because you look around the league, and someone pointed this out, you know, arguably, why could he not be a starting quarterback over some of these other guys that we have around the league who are very questionable? So I'm still on that. I'm on that side as well, where I think it's Jalen Hurts. They just need to move forward and trust him a little bit more. It's weird how they keep, you know, teetering back and forth over whether or not it's this guy. I think it should be Jalen Hurts, but I think I love Gardner Minshew. He would be a great starter somewhere else, not in front of Jalen Hurts.
And an amazing guy to have a beer and a shot with. I'll tell you that much. I would definitely hang out with Gardner Minshew. There's no doubt about it. But yeah, I'm with you. Look, my issue wasn't that Gardner Minshew didn't play well. He did. I mean, granted, some of those throws, though, were I could have made them. I could have put up 303 against that Jets secondary. Yeah,
Jets defense. It's atrocious.
Good pass protection. He did make some great throws, though. I made some good plays. But I don't know, everyone acting like, oh, man, it's, you know, he just opened everything up. Not really. I mean, other than Dallas Goedert, who had a decent game in the passing game? Nobody.
Yeah.
Who other than Dallas Goedert? That was it. Dallas Goedert had a big game. What's his name? Rager made a cameo at one point after fumbling 18 punt returns. And then Devontae Smith did have an end zone target, but aside from that, he was absolutely non-existent. Quez Watkins is a player. I like that kid, but got nothing out of him. It was the ground game, and it was Dallas Goedert. So, no, to pretend like, oh, man, Minshew really did huge things. No, and well, how many field goals did they kick? 50? Like, they played well. They got the win. The second half looked good, and he made some good passes. But the real issue here is, why not just see what Jalen Hurts has to close out the season? That's what I don't understand. Why wouldn't you just at least want to see what he has to close out the year? And if that's the case, like, we know who Minshew is. He's fine. He's a good backup, but he's not a starter. The draft class is terrible next year. I don't want to dig too far into this because I guess at this point, what's it matter? But they have a bye week. Hurts will be the starter in week 15, and not as much will change as you think.
Yeah, and it's a really good matchup for them, especially if Washington's still banged up front defensively. They should be it's easier to throw the ball against them as well. Look, the reality is that Jalen Hurts wasn't benched, and yet Jalen Hurts wasn't playing poorly, and that nobody on that team was like, oh, they need another quarterback. It was circumstantial, and a guy comes in and plays well against the Jets. And if you have Jalen Hurts as your starting quarterback, there's no concern. There's no concern at all. I think if there's any concern on the offense, and it's not just this year, it's also next year, I don't know what you do with Devontae Smith. Like, he's way too good to be disappearing in football games.
They'll figure out how to use him.
Yeah, okay. I wonder if the issue is getting someone behind him that's actually reliable. You see the situation down in Atlanta where it's Kyle Pitts and he's the only one, and they're able to stop him so easily. So if maybe Devonta Smith has someone who's a threat next to him, it might actually benefit him. So maybe that's something that they need to target when they're looking through the draft.
I know we got to move on.
Yep.
If Rager didn't drop those two touchdowns against the Giants, nobody would be talking about Minshew being the starting quarterback going forward. It's all recency bias. Okay. Yeah. Hurts could have had three picks and thrown the touchdown on that fade or deep into the end zone from like 30 yards out. And everyone would be talking about the perfect game-winning dime that he dropped into the breadbasket of Jalen Rager that he somehow let go off of his helmet. That's all.
Yep. Yeah. Just go back to that game. Was it Monday night where Lamar threw interception after interception against the Colts and they find a way to come back and win that football game? And everybody's talking, rightfully so, about how dynamic he was in the end as opposed to how shitty he was in the beginning. You pull yourself out of a hole and it's all at the end of it.
Did Baltimore win that or lose in overtime?
Oh, wait. I thought they won that game.
I can't remember.
Maybe.
I thought they won in overtime. But correct me, maybe I'm wrong.
No, maybe you're probably right. For some reason, I thought I couldn't remember. It went to overtime, I thought.
All right, well, let's look at a couple of more here real quick. We'll get into some stock options. But Adam Thielen, the ankle sprain, nothing's going to change with Justin Jefferson.
Ravens won that in overtime.
They did win that. Okay, in overtime.
Yeah, you're right.
But remember, he was dog shit in the first half.
Horrible, yeah.
Yeah.
And like the reason why they eventually win that football game. Look, Andrew Luck made a career out of that, throwing two or three picks in the first half and then being the hero. Yeah. All right, so let's look at this from anybody other than Justin Jefferson, really, and Dalvin Cook when he comes back, you know, assuming that there. I don't know what this does for the offense, if it's Osborne season or if we just look at a heavier approach to Madison on the ground. We'll talk about Kenyon Drake as well. We can kind of combine these injury concerns that we have with their respective teams. But, Tara, you want to just start with Minnesota and kind of the trickle down with Adam Thielen, assuming that he's going to be out.
Yeah, I don't know how much more we can go to Madison. I mean, he had 22 carries, a really good game, a little bit of work through the air. I do think that it's going to trickle down and it's going to go to both Tyler Conklin and KJ Osborne. I think I talk about them later, two of my guys that I'm going to talk about in a little bit. But yeah, just to give a little preview, I mean, I think, you know, when they have the opportunity, they're both very reliable. The problem is neither one of them has had the opportunity because Thielen just commands so much of that touchdown share. And then you've got the target share heavy with Justin Jefferson. So I think that they can supplement and they can, you know, pitch in and help out here because with that high ankle sprain, I think they're probably going to have to close out the majority of the fantasy season here.
I like KJ Osborne here quite a bit. He's already been the clear wide receiver three. He's not exciting and his target counts are low, but again, it's a concentrated offense, right? So this isn't like Laquon Treadwell. This is actually a guy who they don't hate using. So we saw a 9-target game for Osborne, a 6-target game earlier in the year, a 7-target, another 7-target game. And then against Dallas, Baltimore, and the Chargers, he was, you know, scarcely used. But that's because why would you need to use him a ton when you have Thielen, when you have Cook or Madison, and you have, you know, Jefferson? But as Tara pointed out, again, you have Conklin, and then you have KJ Osborne. And I think KJ Osborne benefits significantly. And let's not forget either that the season's winding down. Most good players have been picked off waivers, and most people, you know, only more of them is going to happen as more players get injured and you're dropping guys on the IR and stuff like that. So, KJ Osborne played 92% of snaps. That was up from 55% the week before, and 7 targets. That's a huge benefit here for him without Thielen. And you said if he misses time, Thielen has a high ankle, right? He's missing time.
He's out. Done for the rest of our time, really.
I would say through the fantasy playoffs, you would think.
Got it.
You would think.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not. I don't know.
No, that's fair. I definitely think that's fair. You know, it's a good time, I think, to transition. These other guys that are banged up are going to come back in conversation. We have our stock up, stock down, and Tara already ahead of the game here with KJ Osborne. So you could expand a little bit more on Osborne, and then we'll move to Javonte Williams. And I hope RC from our Sunday show is watching, because he has been pushing Javonte each and every week just to failure. And this was his week. And Lofty's going to break it all down. But before that, KJ Osborne's your guy, Tara.
Yeah, I think you guys hit it on the nail on the head right there. The snap count is the thing with him. he hasn't had a higher snap count than 55% since week 5. It just wasn't necessary when he's the clear wide receiver 3 there, but they don't really need that wide receiver 3 in the offense. So, you know, you look at when he actually has the ability to be used, when he sees those targets, he is productive with them. So that 92% snap count, 47 yards, 1 touchdown. Again, when we look at Adam Thielen, the amount of touchdowns that are going to be sneaking away with him is crazy. He was actually through week 12, he was actually the wide receiver 7 in PPR. I don't think a lot of people realize that. It's not just in standard, though. I mean, it just adds up over time. He also gets a decent amount of targets. So all that production can't go over to Jefferson. KJ Osborne is someone who I think can significantly benefit in this situation. So it stocks up for me. I think that he's someone that you want to roster through the fantasy playoffs.
Yeah, I have nothing to add. Already did. I mean, KJ Osborne's a guy that should, if you're in a tough spot, because you're not going to be just throwing him out there every week, but if you're in a tough spot and you have Osborne on your bench, you go, okay, he's the wide receiver 2 on a team that has Kirk Cousins, who people get frustrated with Cousins. He didn't have a great game yesterday, but he was PFF's number 2 graded quarterback through the first 12 weeks of the season. Cousins has had a good year. That offense, again, is super concentrated. This is a good spot, you know, it is a good spot that if someone goes down, for you to be that next man up.
Yeah. All right, brother, why don't you hit yours?
Javonte Williams. I had him as a must start on this channel in our start sit video. Granted, this was before the Melvin Gordon injury, but we had already seen Javonte Williams' stock trending upwards. He had played back-to-back games with career-high snap counts. Touch counts were up. He's used, I wouldn't say featured, but he's definitely used in the passing game, has explosive upside, coming off a huge game yesterday, 23 carries, 102 yards. So he crossed that century mark, and then 6 receptions on 9 targets for 76 yards and a score. Big, big game for Javonte. And they tell you, right? They say you can't lose your job due to injury. I'm here to tell you that is untrue, right? Ask Alex Smith. And a bunch of other players who have gotten hurt, the replacement comes in and looks better than them. Now, am I saying that upon Melvin Gordon's return, Javonte Smith is going to get all of the work? No, but I certainly think that Javonte Williams is going to get more work to close out the year than he has. And we had already begun to see that with opportunities in terms of being on the field. Javonte Williams' stock is certainly up. And when Melvin Gordon returns, I wouldn't be shocked if this is like a 65-35 split.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I think what I really like seeing was the 9 targets. I mean, when you look at that Denver receiving core, they're lacking, unfortunately. You know, Teddy's struggling to get the ball to them. I think the highest amount of targets that both Courtland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy saw was both 6. I mean, when you look at that and you've got wide receiver 1, wide receiver 2, that doesn't make sense. So maybe we can see, even in adding Melvin Gordon back in here, that target share can remain with Javonte Williams moving forward if they can find a way to be able to productively utilize him in the pass game, because it wasn't for chump change, it was for 76 yards. So, I mean, that's something that if you want to kick that pass game and move it forward, maybe that's the key here.
He ran routes yesterday he ran 28 routes. So for a running back to run routes on 64% of dropbacks, you got to feel pretty decent about that, even when Melvin Gordon's back.
Yeah.
So my guy, Kenny Gainwell, and we saw that where Boston Scott was active and didn't really make that big of an impact. Miles Sanders did, and now he's hurt. And we've just seen the consistency of the run game. And whoever's healthy is going to be available. And Kenny Gainwell, I was a little surprised at the expense of Boston Scott, but it's reverting back to what we saw at the beginning of the year. I know a lot of us here in Philly, Lofty, kind of blacked that first part of the season out of our brains. But the reality is that Gainwell was taking away touches from Sanders when we were all like, yo, is Sanders going to be more involved in the red zone, the 2-minute drill, things along those lines. Now, assuming that Sanders is either going to be out or limited, Jordan Howard's been banged up. Boston Scott, when healthy, didn't really do much. I would think that people have given up before last week on Gainwell if they had him on their team and he would be available to go after. So somebody that is definitely stock up and combination. How about that as a waiver wire pickup?
I like it. I wish we didn't have a bye week.
Do you see the big inhale though from Lofty? He had the big inhale
finger. I want Tara to agree with you first, and then I'll talk.
Then you ruin our day. Okay.
No. Look, I'm wrong a lot. So go ahead, Tara.
I was just going to say, I wish we didn't have the bye week, because then I think that we would have a higher chance of seeing a Gainwell repeat. But unfortunately, with the bye week, I think that's what, you know, I can't imagine. You know, we don't know the severity of the injury, but again, we saw last week injury, it wasn't that serious for Miles Sanders. So I'm hoping that this is a situation where in week 15, he can come back and be strong, but I don't know. It seems like I'm thinking that Boston Scott just wasn't right. And I'm wondering if he was just active just to be active for the sake of being active.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. They only had 2 guys healthy. So that's fair.
That was exactly what I was going to say, Tara. I'm pretty certain it was the same situation as Daryl Henderson, where they needed an emergency guy. Remember, Scott did not step on the practice field all week. I mean, he was sick, did not practice all week with a non-COVID illness. I think he was just somebody that was there in case of emergency, like break glass in case of emergency. He seemed to be that guy. At least that was my opinion. Sanders said he's going to be okay after the bye. It's hard to take a player's word on that. I don't know. Jordan Howard will have been out for his 3rd straight week. It'll be 4 weeks when they come back from a bye. So I'm scared of this backfield if all 4 of them are active after the bye week. I still, however, think if I had to guess, Eitan, and all of these guys are healthy, I'm thinking Gainwell goes, if all of them are healthy, obviously. If not, then you have to love Gainwell. But my guess is that Gainwell goes back to not playing. Sanders is getting like 65% of carries, and then Jordan Howard's getting the other 35 or maybe a 70-30. That's my guess, but it's so tough to say. We haven't really seen much with all 4 of them healthy.
No, you're right. And that's the I think the beauty of this conversation is it's up in the air each and every week. And to Tara's point, we have an extra week to drive ourselves crazy over all these multiple scenarios with the buy. All right, what about stock down? Who's dropping significantly? Let's throw it back with you, Tara. Who is looking right now like their stock is dipping significantly?
Yeah, I tipped it off a little bit right there. It's Courtland Sutton for me, unfortunately. We're just not seeing enough out of him to really justify feeling comfortable with putting him in our starting lineup whatsoever. When you look at him and you look at Jerry Jeudy, obviously, from my opinion, I think Jerry Jeudy has shifted himself, even though it's been a little bit, he's shifted himself into that wide receiver 1 position. So you look back at the targets for Courtland Sutton, we've got 6. This was a high in prior weeks, 3, 3, 2, 4, 5. I mean, this is just not trending in the right direction. I don't think I felt uncomfortable staying stock down because I don't know if it can even go down any further, quite frankly. So
yeah, right?
Unfortunately, yeah, I just, even with matchups coming up, I just don't see this trending in a positive direction, especially with Javonte Williams coming on so strong. They can lean on the run game against guys like Detroit and Cincinnati.
It's a shame. I'm a huge Courtland Sutton guy. I love him. They just signed him to another big contract. I wish they'd figure it out with him. He can be an alpha receiver. He really can. Yeah. I'm with you 100%, Tara, but it's unfortunate. It just really sucks because this guy is skilled beyond belief. And we've seen him. We've seen flashes this year. I will say, though, Courtland Sutton is a guy in Dynasty that I'm trading for pennies on the dollar because Bridgewater's not going to be there next year. Aaron Rodgers, seriously, you think Aaron Rodgers might be in Denver next year. I'm just saying. And it can't get much worse than it is now.
Right.
If you're getting Courtland Sutton for, let's say, someone's like, I'll trade you Courtland Sutton for a second rounder, you know, like a mid-late second rounder, and I bet people will do it right now.
Yeah.
I'm definitely doing that. Maybe not smart people, but there are people out there that will do it.
Yeah. Got to take advantage of the non-smarts. All me. All right. So we're winding down here. I want to get at least one out of both of you.
Let me give you mine real quick.
I was going to say, yes, if you can be, even for Laufey, if you can have some sense of brevity.
I can provide some brevity here. Yes, Kyle Pitts. He's the tight end 17 since week 8. And even in games where the Falcons managed to put points up, it's Cordarrelle Patterson. Yesterday, it was Russell Gage and Mike Davis. Everybody talked about, you know, Kyle Pitts is a different breed. He's different, right? You can line him up anywhere on the field, which is true, but they're putting him in inopportune positions. He's not producing. They're putting your best defenders on him. They need to just throw him up against linebackers, but they're throwing him up against on the outside against top corners. So what are you going to get? He's stunk since those 2-game stretch earlier in the middle of the season. Kyle Pitts, man, it's rough. Why, tight end 17. He's behind Evan Ingram since week 8. Cole Kmet, Jack Doyle, Hunter Henry, Tyler Conklin. Come on. Ryan Griffin has 2 fewer points than Gerald Everett than Kyle Pitts since week 8. Not good.
Yeah.
He's got to rep Philly a little better than that. You're right. There's got to be a little more.
It's not good, man.
All right, Tara,
I got to do this. Yeah. Can you play him right now going into the playoffs?
I mean, if he's your only tight end on your roster, are you looking to stream at this point?
You almost still have to go with it. It's one of those unfortunate situations where you still look at it and you still say, I still have to, unless there's a fantastic matchup with streaming.
All right, or no, or one or other, Conklin or Kyle Pitts?
Okay, well, yes, well,
go ahead, Tara. Yeah. You answer this. This is right up your alley here.
I will be the crazy person that says Conklin, because Conklin is my waiver wire, is one of my waiver wire pickups of the week. Again, we talked about Osborne, so we know the situation with him and Thielen. Tyler Conklin is very sneaky in the way that he's been this year. He's been statistically better than guys like Higbee, much higher rostered. Guys like Jared Cook is higher rostered than him. Wouldn't think so, but he's outperformed them both in total fantasy points and in average fantasy points per game. So if you have somebody who is arguably been a top 15 tight end, and he's been in a situation where he's got all this talent around him and he's not able to get high production. Now that Thielen's gone, it only makes logical sense that he would become a much higher value tight end. So I can see where he can sneak in there to that tight end one conversation moving forward. So he's a guy I feel comfortable with. I think the target share and the touchdowns are going to be there.
Awesome. All right. So Conklin, not only the answer to your question, but also Tara's waiver wire pickup. Laufey, take us home. Give us your best, strongest waiver wire pickup.
Dude, Devontae Freeman. He's been exhumed from the ground. His cold corpse is warm now. It's kind of amazing to think about, right? Like, Devontae Freeman is actually, he came in. It's like, all right, which one of these washed up guys between Devontae Freeman, Latavius Murray, and Le'Veon Bell is going to get the job done? I would have put a lot of money on it being Latavius Murray. I'll tell you that much right now. But there are still a lot of leagues that Devontae Freeman is sitting on the waiver wire. And if that's the case, you need to grab him. He played 69% of snaps. That is the most he's played all season by a lot. Yesterday in a huge game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, he had 14 carries and 8 targets. They don't target their running backs there. And he saw 8 targets. He now has an 8, 6, and 4 target game over his last 4 and double-digit carries in 5 straight. If Devontae Freeman is still out there, probably like 30% of leagues or 30%, he's going to be out there in 30% of leagues. I'm grabbing him up for sure. Like, he has legit flex capability right now, no doubt about it.
Awesome. We jammed a lot in there. We appreciate everybody hanging with us. No, this is great. We got some good conversation in here. We got some good numbers. We got some good information. We got some good insight across the board, and we've covered everything from what happened over the weekend to what you need to do heading into week 14, right? Yeah, week 14. All right, thanks to everybody hanging with us at It's Terra Time, at Lofty underscore D, at Shanner Show, how you can follow us on Twitter. Thanks to Chris producing. Thanks to you out there for hanging. Again, hit the thumbs up button and really make sure you're subscribed to our season-long fantasy football channel, our odds channel, our DFS channel, so you don't miss anything that we're doing on site. And those links below the video from Yahoo, they're there for you. $10 free. And click if you're new, and you're going to get 1 free month of Awesome One Plus Platinum. All right, we'll be back on Friday at 2 o'clock Eastern for the week-end season-long show. Thanks to everybody for hanging.